Now in studio I have Donna Cooney, and she's a Green Party candidate coming up in the local elections. Good morning, Donna, how are you?
Good morning, Noel.
Okay, well, how's it going on the canvas trail? Is there anything different than it was before, you know, seeing what's been happening over the past couple of years and particularly over the past couple of months?
Yeah, well, our people are talking. They want to talk about what's happening sort of in the media. They want to talk about, you know, their concerns and things about, you know, whether... I think people are feeling like let down even more again about trust and things like that. There's issues of trust and, you know, and I suppose I'm getting a positive thing in that because no matter what, you know, issues people have with the Greens, I think they do trust that we're, you know, that we're honest and we have, you know, clean politics and we're not involved in any of that.
Do you ever get any questions of where are you now, like the Greens?
Yeah, well, it has to, yeah, a couple of people say, you know, I thought you were gone away and everything like that. I say, well, we can't really go away because, you know, the earth's not going away, the problems aren't going away there, and the people that are in the Green Party, you know, didn't really get involved in the Green Party just for politics. We're in politics in order to bring about our policies, but it's a grass movement's movement, so it's not going to go away. I mean, we're run totally by volunteers now. I mean, all our people have given of their time, and a lot of young people as well, you know, highly skilled people that are working for us on a voluntary basis because they believe in what we're doing, which is great, you know. And I think that something like that is happening, you know, in the communities as well, where people are putting in tremendous time, like, you know, volunteering and working in their communities, and it's a great, you know, something positive that's come out of a negative is that real sense of community that's coming back, I think, you know.
Yeah. I was just wondering, the reason I asked the question was, I mean, especially over the past week, we're being bombarded with all sorts of things, and there's nothing cohesive coming out of it at all, and people just seems to be just so deflated, and just don't, no matter what level of politics you are. And I was just wondering, did it filter down to the local elections? To the extent of what's been happening?
To a little bit, but I mean, most people are just concerned about their local areas when it comes to the local elections. I mean, you get the odd people that, you know, are involved, they're listening to politics, you know. I mean, last night now, I know what's going to, I mean, I had a lot of correspondence about the fire, you know, and the ambulance service because of the prime time. So if something comes up like that in prime time, and I must say now I'm fairly supportive of keeping the Dublin Fire Brigade and Ambulance Service in the Dublin, you know, in Dublin City. And so I think to give it to the Health Board, showing that they're, you know, they're not being effective in what they're doing, I think that it would be, you know, I don't think any plans like that should definitely not go ahead. And, you know, especially now that we're looking at having a putting it to the people in a plebiscite to have a directly elected Lord Mayor to be taken away. You know what I mean? More things from the city. I think that Dublin City needs to be seen for the capital that it is. And I don't think we need to be, you know, afraid of saying that we are the capital of Ireland and we should be proud of our city. And, you know.
Yeah, I'm just wondering how you feel about all the different changes that's coming in as regards councillors and the cutbacks to the extent of how many there are, the way the boundaries have been changed, the election of the Lord Mayor, this event as well, about the changes since the last time you went in. I mean, there is a little bit of dissent about the election of the Lord Mayor and the way they sort of, he will take over the power. There was a talk, there was a thing in the paper during the week.
Well, I won't necessarily be a he now, I have to catch on that. Okay. It may very well be a woman because we have a history in Ireland, I think, when it comes to, we had two women presidents, you know.
And
I know
Michael Higgins too. We had a few women Lord Mayors.
We had a few women mayors as well. So okay. I think it could very well be a woman, but whoever that person is, I think it's right to devolve power to them, you know, because I don't think that it should be something that's only for 1 year and that, you know, you only get to know who your mayor is. I mean, I was at a table quiz last night for Mount Temple and they asked, you know, who was the Lord Mayor. Of course, I knew it was Oisin Grinn, but, you know, the majority of the tables didn't, because it only just, people only get around to knowing who their mayor is.
And they're gone.
And they're gone. And there's another one. And I just don't think that's long enough. And even then, even though they're the first person, when it comes to opening something, it's actually, if I don't know if people know that, the Lord Mayor of Dublin comes before the minister or anybody, like when it comes to sort of opening. So they do have a sort of, you know, a role in that sense.
But I think the remit has gotten much wider over the past 20 years.
Well, I think that people, when certain things were tried to be imposed on people, like say in Clontarf when they had the flood defence and the wall and everything, and, you know, and even though the councillors would say they were against it, that they weren't aware of the height of the wall, they weren't against it, they, you know, they felt like, you know, sometimes these things are imposed by the officials, and that there was that breakdown of communication between, you know, that it should be working all in one thing. And I think that if you have, you know, like, you see, need somebody, the executive, the person that's in charge of Dublin City Council shouldn't be somebody that's a civil servant. It should be a person that's elected by the people of Dublin. So if the people of Dublin are not happy with that person, then they don't re-elect them the next time. You know what I mean?
And I'd be having councillors in, had a few in already, and more or less you're the first one I've asked about this. Do you get the feeling of consensus among your colleagues that's going for the election? How do they feel about it? Are they all the same opinion as yourself?
Well, I think the majority of them are, but I mean, I get the impression that the Fingal County Council aren't going to vote for. I've been told that they're, you know, Dublin City Council very much, you know, almost consensus for it. Mm-hmm. But Fingal seem to be, you know, very lukewarm, if not, you know, and I just think it's a shame that they don't feel part of Dublin. I don't know what it is that they feel that somehow that they'd lose some powers because... I don't know whether it's since they moved the offices out of, they used to be on O'Connell Street there, remember, years ago, and then they're out there in Fingal, whether they feel distanced in some way from the city. But I think that's an awful shame because, you know, they are part of Dublin and they are Dubliners, you know what I mean? So they should feel, you know, that they will get as much a chance as anybody else to have, you know, be represented by whoever the mayor is. And they have a lot of young families living out there. They have a lot of issues, you know, out in North County Dublin and things. So I just think that it's a shame. And I think that, you know, I mean, the Labour Party were the ones that proposed that they supported this. It was in their manifesto. Fine Gael went last election saying they wanted reform and, you know, as well. So I just think that it's supposed to be a policy. So they should be saying to their councillors, like, vote for this because this is something that's in the you know, our government policy. And I think that we should be devolving power as close to the people as you can, with a lot more forums set up to listen to people. And definitely... all they're voting for is to let people have a plebiscite, to let people have a say as to whether they want a mayor. So, like, how can you say that's not democratic to say I don't want to ask people's opinion as to whether they want to be able to elect
that's
a mayor?
That's why I was wondering, would it be a bone of contention at the doorstop when you go there? Like, I don't know if people are interested enough because the tenure is for 5 years now. It's not just a yearly thing. As you said, people will get to know them.
Well, even when they go for that and they have the plebiscite, it won't be for another 5 years to the next local election, you know what I mean, after this. So that seems like a long time away, you know what I mean? Yeah. So I don't think it's an issue but you do hear the issues. I sort of bring them around to that, if you know what I mean, because people will say, you know, I don't feel like that the councils have enough powers. I don't feel they can do much. I was in this and such instance and there was this and such happening and they weren't able to do anything because that was in a decision made by the officials. Mm-hmm. And they'd say, what's the point of the council? What's the point of having a council? And then you explain to them what would happen if you didn't and how it could be better, how it could be more democratic, how it is in the rest of Europe where you have a real local democracy, you know?
The way you're talking now is exactly the way I think it should be because I've asked a lot of... councillors, because I did a little bit of vox pop before I knew I was going to be interviewing councillors, and asked them, you know, about councillors, and most people had no idea what a councillor actually did.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So this getting people to talk, no matter what it's about, because the media has the Lord Mayor subject already in the paper, even though it's forwarded down the road. So I'm glad to hear they're asking that. Anyway, just to ask you now about, you have concerns because that's mainly where you came in, over Dublin Port's redevelopment plan. So give us an outline of what the plan is and what your objections are.
Well, it's just such a large plan, and I just feel like that it's another big development that's sort of come out of nowhere. And there was supposed to be consultation. It went on public display in O'Connell's GAA on the Clontarf Road there on Tuesday. It was only there for a day. I went in and I saw the plans. I asked a couple of questions. I had got the documents sent to me in a USB, and then even that you had to read that all on, like, you know, on a screen, and my eyes were killing me the next day because, like, I was up till about 2 or 3 in the morning trying to read.
And was
like,
was it a bit of it like lawyer speak as well when you're reading it? Like, you'd want someone to decipher it for you?
Well, no, it's just there was a lot of repeating, repetitive stuff, like, and you're reading through it, and, like, you'd read stuff, and then you'd have, like, such and such as, we believe these is a danger. We believe that, you know, the quality of water could be severely affected. There's toxins in the sediment and in the dredging that's been taken up, but we have these mitigating measures, which mean, you know, so you get all this thing and you're going, but then there's mitigating measures, which are very short. Mm-hmm. And then you're wondering, Well, I don't know whether, you know, using a clam to dig something up, a clam shaped bucket to dig it up, and using sheeting on either side is going to protect it. I don't know. Do I get to speak to the engineer to actually ask? Do I get to see what those implements look like? Do I get to see an example of that somewhere else where it's been done successfully? I just, you know, for the ordinary person, you need reassurance to be actually shown, because I don't feel there was enough in that to reassure me that things were safe. And previously, when people were supposed to be consulted, when there was the 52-acre infill, and it turned out that they weren't consulted. And then even when we were asked to come along, we were meeting for ages in All Hallows. Like, this meeting was a sort of conciliatory meeting type thing, and to listen to our opinions. But, I mean, then they were deemed that the original EIS wasn't correct. Now, I mean, I would hope they are not making the same mistakes again and that these are fine. But,
Hasn't the EPA got to pass it first? I mean, isn't that a big...
There's 400 and... almost 470,000 cubic square metres of silt being dredged up from the thing to make a deep berthing channels. And, like, I understand they want to bring in the tourist ships, and that's great. And, they, you know, that's good for the economy of Dublin, bringing in all these big tourist ships and things into Dublin Port. But... the effects that they are having with it, we don't want to sort of, as I was saying in my press release, we don't want to kill the, you know, the goose that lays the golden egg, because these tourists are coming in because they like the natural heritage and beauty of Dublin. Mm-hmm. You know, we have our wildlife bird sanctuary in Bull Island. We have, you know, beautiful natural environment and clean bathing water, and you're even seeing the harbour porpoise now, which could be endangered by this because the drilling and underground caused so much noise that the decimals are actually over the amount that would cause permanent damage to the harbour porpoise, which, and they're dumping a lot of this silt as well.
Would the EPA not be monitoring this, though? Because, I mean, talking about natural habitat, the environment.
Yeah, well, you see, they put in this permission and they do their EIS, and then they have to apply for a licence for the dumping to the EPA. That's what they have to apply to the EPA for dumping the spoil, the dredged material off by the Burford Bank.
So does the EPA not oversee the dredging, no?
No, they oversee the, they have to apply for a licence for them for that, you know, and they apply to On Bord Pinola for the application to do these works, and people can make their observations. They can go online and onto the Dublin Port Company, and they'll be able to see the stuff online. They can also request all the documents on USB. But I think it's an awful lot for people to do. Like, it was a lot for me, and I've looked through EISs over the years. Like, you know, I'm like... I suppose I'm 20 years nearly working as environmentalist, but I mean, I have no qualifications in that. That's not what I'm qualified in, but I have enough experience. And even for me now, it was a lot to look through. I just think that what we need is people, you know, completely unbiased, that haven't got any sort of, you know, anything to gain by it, to be able to do. I think that when they're doing these big plans, some money should be given to the residents' associations or whatever, to employ somebody, an environmental consultant, that can look at these and do a proper evaluation on behalf of the people, you know, of the public. And, I mean, that would be proper consultation.
But then, I have to say, fair play to the residents in the area. There's a great legacy there of vigilance on watching Dublin Bay.
There is, yeah, there is now. And they're reading through. They don't, I mean, they haven't, they don't know if they have concerns yet, because it's, as I say, it's a very large document. We have to the 7th of May. And it may be that it's perfectly fine. You know what I mean? That's the whole thing. It's just, I haven't got a lot of trust because of what's happened in the past. And that's probably, you know, and that breakdown of trust has happened. And now I just feel like I would like an independent evaluation of it before I can say if I'm happy enough with it, because I have seen some concerns I have in the document. And that's all I'm saying. As we have till the 7th of May, and I think people should really, you know, take a chance to have a look at it themselves if they can, you know.
I'm just looking at a part of your press release where, I mean, apart from the natural environment and the habitat as well, I mean, the concerns with the weather the way it has been, and you had threatened flooding and some flooding around the Clontarf area. But do you think that there should be more looked into as far as the tidal surges, that it could cause even more?
Yeah, well, they'd say it'd be very minimal if there was any effect. I mean, they're strengthening at the moment, sort of, you know, a part of the channel that at the moment has a little bit of a bend on it, like it's a bit of a meander, and they're strengthening that and they're deepening. But I feel like some of that should be looked at more. I looked at they had sort of photographs and they had different colours, and you tried to see, you know, the different diagrams that they had, you know, and then it ends up by showing you all these, and then it says, we don't believe any significant effect will happen, you know. But, you know, even a small insignificant effect could be, and has that been taken into account now? There's new flood defence plans in line for Clontarf, and they are going to actually allow some flooding onto the promenade, but then stop it going onto the road. That's the new planning thing is actually to almost say, well, at a certain stage, rather than building a big high wall, we'll let it come across the promenade and the grass, but it'll only come across for some. It'll only come across the promenade, and then they'll stop it going onto the road, so it won't get to any of the residents.
Yeah. It's funny, I was driving home, I was in town on Tuesday, and I was driving home, happened to be in the afternoon, late in the afternoon when the traffic is beginning to build up, and sitting in the traffic just before you take the left to Clontarf Castle. And I was watching joggers, and especially cyclists, who looked like they were on the way home from work. And I was saying, isn't it marvellous the work that has been done there and maintained? Oh, because you can go all the way out to Sutton, all the way out on a bike, or if you want to jog. I mean, it'd be terrible to destroy any of
it. Oh, it won't be destroyed now. They're keeping it as a linear park. That's the whole point. Like, it's staying, it's be designated now as a linear park.
Yeah, but if the water's coming up over it,
it'll only be for a short time. If you see when the tide comes in and the tide goes out, you know what I mean?
Okay, right.
Like, you know, that's what I'm saying. Rather than lose that, you know, the majority of the time, the times when we'll get a high tide, you know, the spring high tide, the few times that we get a high tide combined with a wind, you know, combined with the right wind, the wind conditions and heavy rain, various conditions come together and we end up with topping over the wall, that will happen, and it'll go back out again, and it'll be, you know what I mean? And even with a certain amount of planting and various things, you can mitigate those to being a minimal amount. Okay. So rather than having a big wall that destroys it forever, you know what I mean?
Okay.
That's what all I'm saying.
It's the best option.
Yeah, it's a soft landscaping approach to it, which I think they're looking at in the UK with success as well, because, you know, I mean, like, at times, I mean, you could be building walls and building walls and building walls till you end up with nothing. You know, what's the point? Your quality of your life is so bad for the rest of the 360 days of the year.
It's beautiful to be able to look out as well. And with all the recreational sports that goes on as well,
it's
just wonderful.
Yeah, it's great. It's so well used.
So is this something now you'll be expecting to come up a lot on the doorstep over the next couple of weeks? As well as all the other things, of course.
I don't think the Dublin Bar. I think I'm just raising that. I'm sort of like a lone ranger there at the moment with the Dublin Bar, because it just really hasn't cropped up. People aren't really aware of it. There wasn't a lot of people at the public consultation. But, I mean, that's what happened with the 52 acres. I mean, that was sort of, I remember hearing about it, getting the copy of the EIS on the Thursday or the Friday, reading through it, having a letter put together for that Saturday, and I sat outside Nolan's. I put a wallpaper table outside Nolan's, and people signed it and brought those objections in on the Monday. And they only got hundreds of objections instead of what there would have been was thousands and thousands, because it was just, you know, it just like nobody knew about it until it was just right on the time. So we say we have now till the 7th of May and we have the time, but the local elections, people are going to be busy. Mm-hmm. But you know, it's just the time that's in it now, the timing. Even the timing makes me feel suspicious, because like the councillors really don't have a time. They unless they're hearing that this is a big issue, they're not going to be that bothered about it, you know.
And
what
as
I mean?
Well, as I said at the outset, all the things that are happening is within the government as well has people's minds occupied as well. So it must be pretty horrendous. So, well, obviously it's not. People are occupied with other things.
I mean, people are. I mean, there's great things happening in terms of people cleaning up. I mean, some things I'm going on is clean and save streets and everything. And that's the same things that comes up. Like, I was at a meeting the Residents Association in Fairview the other night. And, you know, it's about illegal dumping, people, you know, and that affects people, you know what I mean? If somebody's dumping beside your house and, you know, they're throwing rubbish out day after day.
Well, I was saying it to you earlier on, I was on one of your cleans on the Bullwall maybe about 12 years ago. That obviously still goes on. Is the dumping getting worse? Is it getting worse in any way, or is it...
Well, people people are still dumping and they're dumping takeaways, and it's just very inconsiderate. You know what I mean? It's almost like they think like this is, you know, I sit there, have my takeaway, or I'll sit in my car and have my takeaway, and I'll just open the door and toss them out the side.
Yeah.
And considering, like, you know, like the kids are learning all about, you know, with the green schools and everything about cleaning up and recycling and everything. But I just think the more people you can see, you sort of embarrass them into it, because they see, if they see workers doing, they say, oh, that's your job, you clean up that, you know what I mean, that's your job. And I mean, they have this attitude, and I think it's a sort of an angry attitude. They don't feel ownership of the place they live in,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, you should have pride about the place you live in. I mean, you wouldn't be sitting there in your chair in your living room, mm-hmm. and, you know, throw your rubbish on the, you know.
Some do.
Anyway, but very few.
Getting back to the Green Party as well, can you see a resurgence of strength over the years? I mean, young people, as you said, are more involved with the environment more than they have ever been before. It's coming through the schools, and with what's going on now and everything else, can you see any kind of resurgence? Has young people shown any interest in joining up, or in numbers? Is it?
Yeah, well, we have a lot of young Greens now, and I mean, they'd be very active. I mean, and even in my own group now, we've had some young people, you know, that have joined, and, you know, I mean, they might find it sort of a bit boring to come to meetings and things like mm-hmm. that, but if definitely there's activities, and I mean, they're very aware of, you know, and they're getting involved in campaigns like the fracking, you know, like, you know, and I think that's great, because there was a time, I think, in with young people and in colleges where they were becoming very sort of, you know, they weren't really interested in the environment, or in politics, or even what was happening, you know, outside their immediate world. Like, you know, there was a little bit of cynicism
You stuck with it, so would you go for the leadership if you did come to that in the future? I'm sure you would.
For what?
It'd be great. A leadership of the Green Party.
I don't know.
Why not?
Well, I think Eamon Ryan's doing a good job. I actually don't, I myself don't believe in having a leader of a political party, but I suppose I have my own basis on that. I think the way the political system works at the moment, I think it's needed, because that's who the media pay attention to. That's mm-hmm. the leader of the party. They're the figurehead of the party. Our leader doesn't actually have very much power, unlike other political mm-hmm. parties, because every member has as much power as anybody else.
Yes, yeah.
And, you know, we believe in democracy at the lowest effective level.
Yeah, but I was
so, I mean,
theorising that.
Theorising.
If you got strong again. And I mean, years down the road,
I'm talking about.
I mean, you're a very young woman, you know what I mean? So.
I don't know. You never know.
Listen, Donna, thank you very much, and congratulations, and good luck in the elections as they come up.
Thanks, Noel.
Thank you.